3 measles-related deaths have been tied to an outbreak of the virus in Texas, and measles cases have been confirmed in Ohio and Kentucky. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to talk about the spread of measles are Cincinnati Children's Vaccine Research Center Director, Dr. Robert Frank. Welcome back, Dr. Frank.
Thank you for having me, Lucy.
And a pediatrician with Pediatric Associates of Mount Carmel, Dr. Chris Peltier. Thanks for being here, Dr. Peltier.
Thanks for the invite, Lucy.
Dr. Frank, measles was considered eradicated in the U.S. 25 years ago. What happened?
So measles is one of the most contagious infections we have. And so to be able to keep it away, we have to keep our vaccination rate up. And so the cases we're seeing now are overwhelmingly in children that have not been vaccinated.
And some adults who haven't been vaccinated also, right?
That's correct. And that, we have a high vaccination rate, but measles really takes about 95% of the population to be immunized to keep the virus at check. So it really is important everybody gets vaccinated that is eligible for vaccination.
Dr. Peltier, how is measles spread?
A great question, Lucy. So measles, as Dr. Frank said, it's very contagious. It's really spread by droplets. So if you have an infected person that were to cough or sneeze in an area, that's spread by droplets, and the virus can actually survive after that for up to 2 hours. So if you have one case, one person that has measles and they're in a very crowded place, they cough or sneeze, could potentially expose, many, many people. And Dr. Frank can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe, if you are unvaccinated and exposed, I believe 9 out of 10 people will most likely be at severe risk for contracting measles.
That's right. And one of the other things too, Lucy, is people really need to understand is that people are the most contagious for the 4 days before they get the rash. And at that point, they're just maybe having a runny nose, cough, and maybe a little bit of a fever. So people may just think they have a cold. And it's not until that rash shows up later after they've already exposed everybody that it becomes obvious what they have.
Ah, well, and Dr. Frank, you were talking about how contagious it is. How does that compare to COVID-19 or the flu or the common cold in terms of just how easily it can spread?
So as Dr. Peltier was saying, is that it's really one of the most contagious viruses that we have. It's more contagious than the flu. It's easier to transmit than the flu, than COVID, than really almost any other infection. So if you are not immune and you're exposed to the virus, 9 out of 10 people will get infected. So it's very, very contagious.
We're talking about measles, how it's spreading, and we're going to talk about the best way to protect yourself and your family from the virus. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Dr. Peltier, we've talked about, how much this can affect children who are unvaccinated, but there's also an unvaccinated adult, I believe in New Mexico, who died as a result of this measles outbreak in Texas. How are adults susceptible, Dr. Peltier? I mean, where do adults figure into all this?
Yeah. So again, as Dr. Frank said, if you are vaccinated, you are very, very unlikely to contract measles. So what happens is you have an unvaccinated adult that may travel maybe somewhere else in the country. Unfortunately, now it may be, it's oftentimes here in the United States. We know lots of cases in Texas, New Mexico, and now several cases in Ohio. They contract the disease. And as Bob said, right, you may be contagious up to 4 days before you really know you have symptoms. So thinking about, how long the virus can last, that up to 2 hour period, how contagious it is extremely easy for an unvaccinated adult who's come into contact with measles to spread and really people not even knowing that they've been infected.
Dr. Frank, can adults be actually more vulnerable to measles than children?
So it's more likely that a child is going to get a severe illness, but adults can get it. As you noted, the one person did die. I mean, if you look on the whole, it's about 3 out of 1,000 people that get measles are going to die from the infection. But death is one, obviously, a horrible outcome. But, you can also have deafness. You can have blindness. You can have permanent neurological problems, mental deficiencies in that. So the virus can be very bad. And the problem is that we really have is that we can't predict who's going to be the one that gets sick. And so that's why we need to immunize everyone. Because if I had a way to be able to say, okay, Lucy's the one that's going to get very sick, I make sure she's protected, she's immunized, but we have no way to do that. And that's why we have to protect everybody and get everybody vaccinated.
So do we have a feel for who has the highest risk of infection? Is it anybody who isn't vaccinated, Dr. Frank?
Yes. That's clear as far as the unvaccinated. So in multiple outbreaks of looking at the people that get exposed that have been vaccinated, that haven't been vaccinated, the people that haven't been vaccinated have about a 20 times higher risk of getting measles than people have been vaccinated. It's possible you can still get measles after vaccination, but it's very unusual. And if you compare it to people that haven't vaccinated, the unvaccinated about 20 times higher likelihood of getting measles after exposure.
Lucy, can I add something to that?
Please do.
Actually, I've learned, you know, I've heard Dr. Frank speak many times and learned this from him. You know, if you have vaccinated with one dose of the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, you're about 93% to 95% protected of not getting measles. If you get that second booster dose, that goes up to 97%. And you had asked a little bit earlier about sort of comparing the contagiousness of measles to COVID, and Dr. Frank talked a lot about the differences. Similar to vaccines, right? So some vaccines are not completely preventative. We know that the COVID vaccine does not prevent you from getting COVID. What it really helps to do is decrease the severity of the disease. The measles vaccine protects people from getting the disease at all. So that's a big difference. It is probably, and Bob could correct me again if I'm wrong, probably one of the most effective vaccines we have at inducing immunity from ever getting the disease and lasting your entire life.
Do you want to add to that, Dr. Frank?
No, he said it perfectly.
Well, he said he learned it from you. So this is a good team we have on the program today. We're talking about measles, how it's spreading, and what you should know about it. If you've got questions, give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. You know, Dr. Frank, at the top of the program, we were talking about how measles was considered eradicated in 2000 in the United States. It would seem to me that that means a lot of adults have, you know, were never exposed to measles, were never, you know, they were never around somebody who had measles. Do doctors know a lot about adult measles cases and how they can differ from measles in children?
So that's a good question, because really we don't see a lot of cases of measles in adults, because, you know, in the days before we had vaccine, basically the time you got to 7 years of age, about 90% to 95% of people have had measles. So it's pretty much a disease of childhood. But like you said, if you have a group of people that haven't been immunized, they are going to be at risk, and that we are going to see more people as adults getting measles. And that, you know, so we don't really know exactly what those things. I can tell you what happens in kids, and that a lot of times adults get more severe diseases than the children when they get the same infections. But I really don't know, because we just don't see that many cases in adults typically.
Well, let's talk about what happens in kids, Dr. Peltier. I mean, both of you have talked about how these symptoms early on can be a runny nose, can kind of look like a cold. What are the most common symptoms that kids get if they get measles?
Yeah, so the most common symptoms early on are going to be cough, runny nose, red watery eyes, right? Which is what we're seeing right now with many other viruses. Of course, we're getting to allergy season. It can cause some diarrhea. And then you can sometimes see these small sort of spots in sort of on the inside of the mouth. And those are called coplic spots. And then, of course, you also sort of get a rash that's really pretty diffusely all over the body. Those are probably the most common symptoms that we would see, and when we would start to suspect that somebody has measles. Unfortunately, there are some more severe complications that are usually what end up having kids admitted to the hospital for. Measles very often can cause pneumonia, so kids can present with trouble breathing, look very sick. And then it also can affect the brain and the neurologic system and causes some inflammation that's really probably not completely understood of why that happens, but it can cause, damage to the brain and confusion. And unfortunately, measles can, as we've been seeing, result in death.
Hmm. And Dr.
So one of the things, Lucy, as far as that too, is that fever. As it's so usually after about 4 days of the symptoms, when that rash happens, they're typically starting to get fevers too. And the fevers last somewhere between 3 to 5 days is the usual.
Are these very high fevers?
Yeah, they can be 103, 104. Mm-hmm. You can be quite hot with the infection.
And Dr. Frank, Dr. Peltier was just talking about these neurological complications. Mm-hmm. I think you referenced those earlier too. Is it true that these neurological complications can come much later after, you know, even years after a child's had measles?
Correct. And so that there's two things. There's one is the acute. So right at the time you're having the measles, and that's called encephalitis or swelling of the brain. But then you can get another very unusual syndrome that happens even 10 to 20 years later, which is called SSPE, subsclerosing panencephalitis. So pan means you're all and encephalitis your brain. So it's a scarring of your whole brain. And that unfortunately is a universally fatal disease. We have no treatment for it.
Yeah, sounds awful. We do have some
Lucy
call-
I'm gonna can I go back to the rash and just it's again because
sure
I get a lot of parents calling us saying, you know, my child has a rash. There are a lot of springtime viruses that cause a rash, and I know they're often, you know, worried could this be measles. So, you know, the rash, and I think Bob mentioned, really begins about 2 to 4 days after the symptoms begin, and it really is a rash that kind of starts at the top. So it really begins at the hairline and then begins to spread downward to the face, neck, and trunk. So it kind of moves from up top downward.
Okay. We do have some callers on the line. We're going to take some of those. Hi, Ruth. Thank you so much for your call. What is your question?
My question is, I'm 85. I had measles as a kid about 5 times, both the long measles once and the little short 3-day measles 3 or 4 times. Do I have immunity from having measles as a kid, or do I need to get a measles vaccine?
Great question, Ruth. What do you say, Dr. Frank?
Infection gives you lifelong immunity, so you don't need another vaccine. And so what you had is the one thing we used to call German measles or the rubella, and then the hard measles, which is rubeola, which is what we're talking about today. But once you have either of those infections, you're immune for life.
And you'll see it because measles was so common pre-vaccine, you will often see the reference that if you were born before 1957, you are considered immune from measles because you most likely had it growing up as a child. And as Bob said, once you have the infection, it infers lifelong immunity.
Yeah. So that's good news for you, Ruth. Thanks so much for calling. We appreciate that question. We have another caller on the line. Hi, Rebecca. Thanks for listening. What's your question?
Hi, my question is, I've got an 8-month-old daughter, and she's not quite ready, from my understanding, for the vaccine yet. So I was just curious how best to keep her protected, and if there's anything that we can do to kind of make sure she stays safe.
Great question. Thank you, Rebecca. Chris, I'm going to let you take that one. I'm sorry. Dr. Peltier,
great.
I'm going to let you take that
one. No, please. Please call me Chris. I'm more than happy to because we get that question in our general peds practice a lot. So you are correct, Rebecca. The recommendations for when to get the first MMR vaccine, which obviously protects against measles, is at age 1 or greater. However, the CDC has a contingency plan that if there were to be an outbreak to where either you live or where you may be traveling, you can give the vaccine. And Bob, I believe it's 6 months and up. I'll let you correct me again if I'm wrong. So 6 months and up. For instance, if there were much more of an outbreak, you know, 10 cases seems like a lot. But, you know, if we were living in West Texas right now where there's many, many more cases, it's very likely that the Ohio Department of Health may recommend that children 6 months to a year get protected. Also, if you were going to travel to a high in area where there's a lot of vaccine, again, I'm using West Texas, New Mexico, I would probably recommend that we vaccinate your baby, especially because he or she's 8 months old. The caveat to that, though, is that does not replace the dose. You would still need to get another dose after 1 year of age. And then typically we do a booster at 4 years. So really, if we did it early, your baby would get a total of 3 MMR vaccines.
Right. But for right now in Ohio, I would say that we don't have a recommendation for the early administration. But as Chris was saying, you can call me Bob too, as far as Chris was saying, as far as if there were a lot more cases, that may change. But at this point, it's not a recommendation. So the best thing is, sort of, one of the things that you did, Rebecca, is you gave her the gift of antibodies, your child the gift of antibodies. And that's one of the things that moms give to the babies through the placenta when the babies are born, and even actually a little bit before they're born. And that's one of the reasons why we can't give the measles vaccine before about a year of age, because your antibodies actually interfere with the vaccine working. So while your antibodies are great for helping your baby be protected, it makes it so that the vaccine doesn't work as well. So it's not a safety issue about giving the vaccine before a year of age. It's just that it doesn't work as well. And so that's why we really restrict the use in situations where we have outbreaks.
That's great. Rebecca, does that answer your question?
Immunity of antibodies. Is there any evidence of breastfeeding? Because I am still breastfeeding my child. Does that help at all with any kind of continued protection?
Okay. How about breastfeeding? Does that help? Dr. Peltier,
so we definitely know that there are... Oh, go ahead, Bob. Go ahead.
No, Chris, I was going to say that.
I was going to say, we definitely know that there are lots of pro-immunity factors through breast milk, antibodies, IgG. And I'll ask Bob, I don't know specifically if measles immunoglobulin passes through breast milk. My guess is it may, but I'm gonna ask you as our expert.
Yeah, I mean, by the time you're getting to 8 months, the amount of antibody in the breast milk is lower, but you're certainly not going to... As we say, breast is best, right? As far as that, so whenever moms have the ability to breastfeed, we do encourage it. And that's the best way to keep babies happy and healthy and fed well.
Thanks so much for your call, Rebecca. We sure appreciate it. Let me ask you this quickly, Dr. Frank. What if you have family members who are opposed to vaccinations? You have a baby who's younger than recommended, like Rebecca's baby, but you know, grandma and grandpa don't believe in vaccinations, or an aunt and uncle don't believe in vaccinations. How do you keep your baby safe under those circumstances?
Well, as Chris was saying, as far as that Dr. Peltier was saying, as far as that the transmission is respiratory, it's a droplet somebody's coughing on. So that the way that you really kind of protect is that you keep people away that are at increased risk. And so, you know, it's one of those things as far as I'm not trying to be mean to you, mom or dad, but it's just, you know, my baby, I'm worried about, there could be a risk, and I have different opinions about vaccines, so I just really need you to be keeping a bit of a distance. I know that's hard for both of us, and it's hard for you with not seeing your grandchild, but this is something where we need to keep our grandchild safe. So really the distancing is the important, just like we did with COVID.
We are going to continue our conversation after a short break, and later in the program, we'll discuss Julia Child's recipe for success. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our conversation about measles, how it's spread, and how to protect yourself and your family from the virus. My guests are Cincinnati Children's Vaccine Research Center Director, Dr. Robert Frank, and a pediatrician with Pediatric Associates of Mount Carmel, Dr. Chris Peltier. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. And we do have a caller who's been waiting very patiently. Robin, thank you so much for your patience. What's your question?
No problem. Why is it that some vaccines, like the measles vaccine, are almost 100% effective in preventing the infection entirely, but other vaccines, like the COVID vaccine, can only lessen the severity of a potential infection?
Great question, Dr. Frank. Do you have a good explanation for that?
So it's really as far as the immune response that we're getting with the vaccine, but that some vaccines just really are a little bit more effective than others. But one of the things, you know, I think that we didn't message real well with the COVID vaccine, and really with a lot of vaccines, is that what our main goals we're trying to do is to keep children or adults or whatever out of the doctor's office or out of the hospital or dying from the infection. And so with those, if you look at all the childhood vaccines that we are giving, is that the decrease in cases is somewhere between 95 and 100% compared to pre-vaccines. So the vaccines are really very, very good at decreasing the cases, but we need to keep everybody vaccinated so we can keep those levels so good.
Okay, Robin, thanks so much for calling, and thanks again for waiting on hold. We appreciate that. We have another caller on the line. Hi, Jennifer. Thanks for listening. What's your question?
Hi, Lucy. Thanks for taking my call. So I am a child of the 80s. I know I did have my first MMR, but by the time the second MMR was available, I'm pretty sure I never got that. So my question is, would you recommend getting the second one so it increases my immunity, or am I fine with just the one MMR?
I think that's a great question, Jennifer, because I'm in the same boat. I'm of that age where they were giving you one shot when you were a kid, and then you're just drinking from the hose for the rest of your life. So, Dr. Frank, what's the answer there?
So, like Dr. Peltier was saying before, is that one dose is about 93% effective. So the Centers for Disease Control is saying in a routine setting, which I'm assuming you're in, one dose for an adult should be sufficient. That you could get a second dose, but I don't think it'd be really that helpful for you. But if you were in, say, like you were a school teacher and you could be in a higher risk setting by having kids exposing to you all the time, then getting a second dose would probably be reasonable. But otherwise, one dose for an adult should be quite sufficient.
Is that true if you're going to be traveling also? I've seen some recommendations that if you're going to be traveling and you might be in another country or another part of our country where there's an outbreak, that you might want to consider kind of beefing up that dose.
So getting a second dose wouldn't hurt you. The vaccines are safe. The vaccines are effective. What it would do is, like Dr. Peltier was saying, is it would raise the level of immunity from like 93% up to about 97, 98%. So you do get a bit of an increase in immunity with the second vaccine. And it really depends on where you're traveling. But it would be something where it wouldn't hurt you. The vaccine is very safe. The side effects basically is that it hurts where you're getting a shot. And some people, a few days after vaccine, they may have a fever for a day or two, and they may have a rash for a day or two. But that's not measles. That's just your immune system with the vaccine.
Okay. Well, thanks.
I would
thanks,
add
Jennifer.
To that, Lucy, you know, it sounds like, you know, Jennifer knew she only got one. You know, if you're in a situation where you're like, I think I only got one, but I'm not 100%. Again, if you're going to be in a high risk situation, it would not hurt even if that was your third vaccine. It may not increase the efficiency, the effectiveness of the vaccine, but other than those minor side effects that Bob mentioned, it wouldn't hurt you.
Okay. I think we talked earlier in the conversation that I think you said, Dr. Frank, it takes like 95% vaccination rate to have that kind of herd immunity. And I've, you know, we obviously had at least close to that when measles was effectively eradicated in 2000. How does that compare to vaccination rates among young children these days? Or are those rates a lot lower?
Not a lot lower, but we're at about 92. And so it is a little bit lower than we would like. And so this is, to me, what this is a reminder. This is a kind of the red flag of saying that these diseases are all out there. And if we let our vaccination rates drop, it's not if we're going to have outbreaks, it's when we're going to have outbreaks and where we're going to have outbreaks. So this is really just a reminder of how important it is for everybody to get all the recommended vaccines. And all these vaccines have been tested. They've been tested together, and that we know that they're safe in the combinations to be given. And we really highly recommend everybody to be vaccinated.
And this is a situation where really, I think sometimes pediatrics and science were a victim of our own success, and that we've done a fantastic job decreasing infections because of vaccines. I went to med school in the early 90s. I've never seen a case of measles. I have, however, seen many cases of other bacterial infections like Haemophilus meningitis and pneumococcal pneumonia and meningitis that now I very rarely see because of both the Hib and the pneumococcal vaccine.
Dr. Peltier, do you run into vaccine hesitancy among parents? I mean, there were some scary stories circulating that have been disproven about, you know, side effects or ramifications of these vaccines. What worries do you hear from parents about, you know, whether they should get their children vaccinated?
That's a great question, Lucy. And I think it really sort of runs the gamut of why. And I think whenever I interact either in my practice or if I'm just talking, I'm at a family function or a social outing and somebody brings it up, you know, it's important to have that conversation and first, you know, sit down and say, tell me, talk to me, what are your concerns? What are you worried about? Most parents that I've talked to, they just need some education. You know, obviously they want to do what's best for their child and make sure that their child's healthy. And they may have had heard some misinformation or they may just have some questions. And they often just need some reassurance about the vaccine. And I would say that's the vast majority of people. Then you have sort of the other extreme, which I think, unfortunately, we've seen more and more of from the COVID pandemic on, where you have people that really view vaccination as a medical freedom issue and, not wanting the government to dictate how they provide care for their children. And I think at the end of the day, there's some people that no matter how much conversation we have, I'm never going to be able to convince them. But I would say the vast majority of my parents, once I sit down and talk to them and I give them some information and we talk about why they're important, how they work, and how safe they are, I think most parents, will eventually sort of come around and realize that.
Dr. Frank, are there any other effective treatments for measles? I know HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has talked about vitamin A. Is there any research to show whether that's effective?
So we have no effective treatment for measles. What the vitamin A is being used for is that what we know is that in children that have vitamin A deficiencies, they have a higher risk of getting severe measles. And that's why it's recommended that if a child is hospitalized and has measles, to be giving two doses of the vitamin A under a controlled situation so that we know that they're getting it safely. But as far, measles is not prevented by vitamin A. Measles vaccine prevents measles, but vitamin A does nothing to prevent measles. And vitamin A may decrease the severity of the infection a little bit, but not the frequency.
And it's important to note that high doses of vitamin A can be extremely toxic to a child.
Yes.
You know, it can cause very minor symptoms like nausea, vomiting, headache, maybe some joint pain, but it also can cause some really significant damage to the liver, to the brain. It can increase the pressure within the brain, cause confusion, and can actually cause coma. So it's important that, as Bob said, to understand that vitamin A does not prevent you from getting measles, and it really should only be used in a hospital setting to potentially decrease the severity of a child that's already sick enough to be in the hospital with measles.
And what Chris was saying there is that's not just theoretical. We've actually seen that happening in Texas, is that children have been hospitalized because the parents didn't understand and they actually gave too big a doses of vitamin A and their kids got sick.
Mm. So that's not something that parents should mess with themselves.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
So we've only got a few seconds left. Bottom line is the message to parents and adults that, hey, this vaccine is safe. You got to make sure your kids have gotten it and make sure you've gotten it if you're not sure.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, 100%. And just one other note I would like, I would recommend, again, most causes of fever and rashes in kids in Cincinnati is not going to be due to measles. However, if you maybe had traveled to a place, West Texas, New Mexico, where there was higher rates of measles, or you have a known exposure, it is very important that you call your healthcare provider first before going to either their office or the emergency room, because the last thing we want to do is increase the spread of measles. If we truly think that a child has measles, we would contact the county health department, and then they would sort of assist in sort of the next steps.
We'll have to leave it there. I've been talking with Dr. Robert Frank and Dr. Chris Peltier. Thank you both so much for your time. Up next, Julia Child's Recipe for Success. This is Cincinnati Edition.